Well, hey guys, welcome to Boning Soul. Thanks for joining me again. If this intro sounds a little echoey, it's because I'm not using my microphone, so that's why that's the case. Anyway, so season's here. Hunting season started. Gone out a couple times at this point. Didn't see anything the first night. The other day, I went out early in the morning. I was kind of walking in at gray light. Just because it was an area that I hadn't been to. I don't think I went to this area at all last year. Maybe I did, but it was like later season, like, you know, in a small game after deer season was finished and stuff. And it came up on a giant doe. We kind of surprised each other. Actually, I had my head down. I was looking at my compass. I kind of more wanted to go into gray light so I could see what was going on. I could see the sign if there was anything going on. And she kind of came around, you know, about 20, 25 yards or whatever. And she saw me, I saw her, and we just kind of exchanged glances and thought, well, okay, this ain't going to happen. So she kind of trotted off. But very encouraging. I found, miraculously, a place where it's just raining white acorns. Not only that, there was a lot of, under certain trees, there was a lot of, you know, deer poop, obviously, relatively fresh. So one or the other, no big deal, right? I mean, if you got feed, great. If you've got poop, great. But if you got deer and feed under the same, you know, in a localized area, and this one area just kind of looked tore up. Now, this was later on that morning, obviously. I couldn't stay all day. I needed to go back, and I had to go back to that same spot at night. I don't know if I buggered up the area. Maybe I did. Maybe I scented it up too much, just kind of looking around, you know, trying to get a lay of the land of, like, just how big this circle really is. It was about a, I don't know, 50, 60, maybe even 70-yard circle that was really, really hot. And I don't know. Maybe I buggered it up. Maybe I didn't. Maybe nothing just came by that night. But didn't see anything, but super hot. Normally, I don't catch the acorn drop, the white acorn drop, because they're usually down and scooped up by now. You know, we get high winds or something like that. A lot of these acorns are down, already gobbled up, already eaten, squirrels, deer, all that stuff before season even opens. Well, this was a rarity. I mean, it was raining acorns. I mean, I could sit there and within maybe like a dozen trees around me, I could hear acorns falling. Now, that's a good thing and a bad thing, because I know it's not just localized. It's an oak kind of high ground area anyway. And there was a lot of white acorns dropping. And that's probably, you know, not that great, because you can't, you know, they've got kind of feed all over the place. But I thought I localized it to the place where there was a lot of traffic and poop and all that stuff. And I don't know, maybe I might go back there again. But it's one of those things where if you don't go back within, I don't know, a few days, they're all going to be done and dropped and gone, right? That's not going to be as hot anymore. But, you know, I was pretty encouraged to see that. So went up and down the tree a couple times, obviously. You know, the first day I went, I actually moved like twice. You know, just because you get up and you don't have the lanes you thought you did, or you're not in the best tree that you thought you did. You don't have the right cover behind you that you thought you did. So that gave some good practice. That was good. I don't know if that made too much noise or not. I'm pretty good at climbing up and down, actually. I've gotten everything kind of went smoothly. I didn't really practice preseason at all this year, going up and down the tree at all. I didn't really change anything. I'm still one sticking up and down, and using you know, that Novik Celo. So I'm really comfortable with all that. So all that stuff went really good. And I don't know, more, you know, I'm just gonna try and eke out as many days as I can. Try to fit it in with work and family and all that stuff, just like every year. But anyway, just excited to be out, excited to be gone, gone hunting, and it's season's here. I'm just so happy. So anyway, in this episode, I have Billy Dryden. So Billy and I met at ETAR, and we didn't know each other, and he didn't know me. I didn't know him. We didn't know. I think even, you know, we were camping with Will Nicholson and Travis Stiles, right? We were all kind of together. We kind of all ended up together through various, I don't know, various ways or whatever. We all ended up pretty much hanging out under the same, you know, tent, easy up, that kind of thing. We ended up shooting together all weekend. And it was a great time, man. It was an awesome time. That's one of the great things about someplace like ETAR. It's just awesome. You make friends. He's a killer. He's a stone cold killer. He's a great hunter. And he's an amazing, amazing shot. He's like pure instinctive, and it's like really frustrating watching guys like him, because he is really, really good. I mean, he could pick up anybody's bow at any distance and just nail, over and over and over again, he can just nail you know, the kill zones. And I mean, he's really, really good with it. So it was pretty fun to watch that kind of talent. So anyway, we get into all kinds of stuff. We get into, you know, where he hunts, how he hunts, all the usual stuff. You know, we geek out a little bit about gear and that kind of thing. We dive into some anti-crossbow talk. And if that upsets you, well, too bad. Crossbows upset me in archery season. So that's my podcast, and I'm going to bitch about it. So there you go. Anyway, with that said, I guess make sure to go check out the Push Archery Center of Knowledge, right? The courses at the PAC. Awesome stuff there. Check out Hiko Ito Knives. Hopefully going to get to use that again this year if I get something down. I'm really excited about it. Great stuff. Go check that out. And I think that's really going to be it. I think by the time this comes out, most of you guys are either hunting or some of you guys have October 1 start dates. But it seems like there's a lot of success going on out there already. So anyway. That's it. I'm not going to babble anymore. Here is my interview with Billy Dryden.
There you go.
It does not say starting recording, though.
It's recording. It's recording on my end.
So. Oh, there it is. I see it.
There we go. Yeah, it's kind of finicky that way. So,
can you still hear me good?
Yep, I got you. I got you loud and clear.
Perfect.
Got you loud and clear. So, Billy Dryden.
Yeah.
Thanks for being on. We hung out at ETAR. Like, you and I really hadn't met or anything like that. Before that, I really wasn't like following you or any of that stuff. You know, you're not all that big on social media anyway. I mean, you put out some stuff, but we had a cool few days, man.
Oh, it was a blast. Got to hang out with you and Travis Stiles and Will Nicholson, and boy, that place was just absolutely unbelievable.
Was it your first time there?
It was my first time there. Yeah.
Yeah. Ditto. What did you think of it? What was your impression as a newbie?
Oh, it just the sheer size of it and the amount of courses was unbelievable. The vendor tent was huge. And I mean, it had everybody that was anybody in the traditional scene was there.
That's what kind of struck me is not only just, you know, our online friends that we normally associate with and, you know, follow and comment on, but it was, you know, like the legends, you know, the modern day living legends, I guess, you know, like the Monty Brownings of the world and the Brian Burkharts and, you know, Mike Mittens and things like that. Super cool experience, you know. And the shitty thing is, like, I mean, if you were to mention those names to even in like in other hunting circles, right, in let's say compound circles or whatnot, you know, and much less like outside of a hunting circle, nobody would know who these people are or just how incredible adventures, you know, that they've had and the experience they have. You know, it's kind of a shame on the one hand, but it's also special that like people like you and me can get to, you know, firsthand, like shake hands with some of these people and just like listen, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I got to talk to Monty Browning for probably 25 minutes one morning, and I built that Tri-Lambo, and he was holding it, looking at it. I mean, no compound guy is going to look at your compound and tell you how nice a job you did on it.
True. True. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, that bow should have some mojo now that Monty handled it.
It should either attract, like, a grizzly bear or at least, like, a whitetail or two, right? I mean, one of the two.
Yes, absolutely.
Before we get too far, I guess, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Like where do you live and, just kind of go from there. What do you do?
So I'm from East Central Ohio. I've been a bow hunter for, probably about 20 years. And the last 12 or so, I've been completely traditional. And just enjoy hunting, fishing, and the outdoors.
What, been Central Ohio, like, the whole time? Kind of grew up and just, or did you move around at all or not? Or you just kind of like a, you know, local boy and just kind of grew up and still there?
Yeah, so I live probably 25 minutes from where I grew up. I've been here all my life.
That's awesome. Did come from a hunting family or?
Yeah, but not to the extent I've taken it to. Dad hunted some. My brothers hunted some, mostly gun season, and we would rabbit and squirrel hunt. And then I was really the first one in the family to pick up bow hunting, and I just have ran with it.
Is that all you do exclusively, or do you do rifle and stuff too?
I will hunt with a muzzleloader some, but pretty much I'm a bow hunter at heart.
Yeah. So you got into it pretty early then, it seems like, right? I mean, like you said, small game, that kind of thing. What made you do the switch? Like, what was the impetus to be like, hey, I'm going to pick up a stick and a string instead of, you know, a compound?
I think there's quite a few factors that led to it. I remember watching Barry and Gene hunt whitetails in Texas. And then I had always shot a recurve on and off. And then I think I could see where the compound was going. I knew eventually someday there would be laser range-finding sights that would put a dot in there. And I just didn't want to go down that route. I didn't want to rely on technology when I could rely on woodsmanship.
Yeah. Yeah, and we're there. We're there with this stuff. I mean, with the, you know, automatic range-finding bow sights and, you know, it's... I don't know. We don't have to go down that road, but it's kind of, you know, and it's kind of sad because we've got, this is a total kind of like squirrel rabbit hole kind of thing. But I mean, we've got so much more to deal with now, in archery seasons with kind of trying to beat back like crossbows and air bows and all these other things that they try to, you know, lump into archery season, that it's almost like, you know, something like a compound with, you know, a laser range finding sight isn't that big a deal. Like, that's not the biggest like threat on the radar, you know what I mean? And that's sad because that is a big threat on the radar, but all these other ones are just like policy wise it's frightening, man. I'm not happy. I know you're not happy, a lot of people aren't happy, but you know, I don't think we have a voice, you know, and that kind of sucks.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think there are organizations that are fighting a good fight. But I know they've tried to pass the air bow several times in Michigan, and thankfully so far it hasn't went through, but it's not a bow. There's nothing about it that makes it a bow.
No. So I'm in Minnesota, and this year they finally, and we knew this was coming, right? They finally approved crossbows for the regular archery season. It used to be, if you were over, you know, if you were disabled, right? And even that, I'm using air quotes, the disabled thing is like really open to interpretation. You know, all you need is, God, a doctor who doesn't give a shit probably or whatever. And like, here you go. You know, you might have like, oh, muscle cramp, and oh, I'm disabled. Which sucks because it really takes away from the people who really are disabled, you know, who might need some sort of implement like that. But no, this year they said, you know, all across the board. And actually just like week and a half ago, I called our DNR, right? I called the customer service line or whatever, the DNR. Nice friendly lady there. I think I've talked to her a few times. And I said, look, I said, well, I was calling about something like CWD testing kits or something like that. And I said, hey, while I got you on the phone, the crossbow thing, like, you know, who shoved this through? There was no comment period. There was no period where, you know, people can, you know, go to meetings or voice their opinions or whatever. And what she told me, she said the DNR was not even consulted. She said it all happened at the legislative level. She said all we are told is this is legal now and this is what you're doing. She said they didn't even talk to any of the biologists, anybody that's been there for, you know, that actually understands wildlife, that actually understands the seasons. And she said, nope, we weren't even instructed. It kind of not really blindsided because they kind of knew this was coming, but they said, she said, yeah, we weren't even asked. We weren't even asked to seat at the table, you know? And I'm thinking like, okay, could the conspiracy theorist inside, conspiracy theorist and, you know, guy inside of me says, so, you know, who's greasing whose palm to put this legislation through? You know, makes you wonder.
Oh, it's absolutely the manufacturers. So this is a statistic from Ohio. Last year, there was more deer killed in archery season than the one-week gun season. And out of 99,000 deer shot in archery season, only 28,000 were shot with compounds, recurves, and longbows.
The rest are crossbows.
The rest are crossbows. Majority. Yep.
Well, that's what happened in Wisconsin. You know, they've had crossbows for several years now. And I think in Ohio, too, it happened now. I might be wrong about that one, but... Yeah, it was well over 50% of the harvest now is with crossbows in a season. And then the argument these people make is like, well, you know, they would be hunting anyway. You know, it's not like we don't see a decline in hunters. We just see a shift in, you know, the seasons they're hunting in. And I'm like, well, yeah, you know what, dude, but I'm in this season because I want to be with people who are actually hunters and not just like trigger pullers. There's a reason I hunt, and I would do the same thing if I had a compound in my hand. You know what I mean? Call me a hypocrite, but that's where I would draw the line, you know, but I would draw the line, you know, just before a compound with a laser rangefinding sight, you know, but it's like, I don't want to share the woods with people who aren't as passionate as I am. You know what I mean? And that's selfish. It's elitist, and I don't care, you know. Okay. I'm proud of that then, because you know, if all you're really trying to do is just kind of squirrel your way into another season, and this is the only weapon you can, you know, pick up because it's got a buttstock and a trigger and sights and, four stock and all that stuff. I mean, it's just like, I don't want to share the woods with you. And, you know, I don't understand the people like, well, the total harvest number isn't going to change. Yeah, but the harvest numbers and the tags allotted for certain seasons, sure, shit are going to change. And that's what they found in other states. And I don't know, maybe I'm hoping, I don't know, who knows, this it just really like it more than irked me, knowing that like these things come down the pike made by the legislators who, you know, they're not sportsmen. And it's like, okay, well, who's paying you off? You know, which manufacturer is paying you off and how much? You know, it's just so dirty. And something that's like so like pure to me as like hunting and being in the woods and being a hunter, it's just dirtied, you know, with the politics side, because politics isn't everything anyway. And this was like this one little corner that, you know, that was shielded from all that. And now they've got their dirty, filthy little tentacles in there. And it just makes me just feel gross. You know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean. The crossbow, in my mind, is the easy way out. And I'm 100% okay with people hunting with a crossbow, but I think they should have their own season. And it should not be as long as a regular bow season.
Yeah. Yeah, I agreed. I was just at the range the other day, just yesterday, the day before, you know, and I'm shooting my ASL there, and, you know, I'm happy. And then this guy just comes in and I can't blame him either, you know, because like if they don't know any different and all they see is like, hey, I want to be out in the woods more, like that's what they see. You know, and I got to try and not be so like hateful toward the person, because they may not understand like, hey, if like the joy is in the trying, the joy is in the chase, not the, you know, less than 1 minute MOA or whatever at like 100 yards kind of thing. And he was in there and he buying a crossbow and how fast is this going? Which one's more compact and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And they literally took like two shots, you know, dead center. And that was it. His kid was in there shooting. And his kid was shooting like a kid's like compound or whatever. And I'm like, it was like, okay, so you got the dad who's trying to, in my mind, right? I'm hoping he's trying to spend more time out in the woods, right? And maybe the kid goes along with him. And then you can't really feel ill will toward a dad who's trying to spend more time with his kid, and this is a hobby they're going to do together. I just wish the dad would have a different like weapon in his hand, you know?
Yeah. I mean, at least with a compound, and I shot compound for years.
Yeah.
You have to shoot your bow. You can't just pick it up the day before season and then go hunting. And I think a lot of your crossbow hunters are coming over from gun season. So I can see how it's a good thing, but there's a vast majority that don't do the due diligence and work to become better hunters.
No. No. Yeah, and that's, I don't know. I didn't want this to be like a big. I told you we'd go down squirrel like rabbit holes, dude.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want this to be like a big kind of like diatribe about crossbows and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean this we'll see what happens this season here in Minnesota, because it's a first one where it's you know, quote unquote fair game for everybody, and not just you know, disabled or over 65 or whatever, you know, that it used to be. Yeah, just like they did with muzzleloaders a few years ago, you know. So we've got muzzleloaders, and by the way, someone can call me a hypocrite because I have an inline muzzleloader, right? And to some, a true pure muzzleloader is, you know, like flintlock or, you know, whatever. But it used to, like in muzzleloader season, you could not use a scope, right? In a regular firearm season, you could hunt with a muzzleloader and that could have a scope on it, just like a rifle. But in muzzleloader only season, you couldn't have a scope. Well, a few years ago, they changed that. Now you can have a scope. So basically, it's just an extension of firearm season. You know, I have a Thompson Center Impact, right? The thing is like stupid accurate, even with iron sights. I mean, I shot a deer at 117 yards with that thing with open sights, you know, a bunch of years back. But I know it'd be good out to 200 with a scope, but I don't put one on there. You know, I choose not to hunt with that when I do, you know, hunt in muzzleloader season. But it's the same thing. They just keep like making like shit easier and easier for people. And they're just trying to do this like one. It's turning into one big long like general season basically. And like here you go, you can hunt from, you know, September through end of December, and you know various forms of something with a trigger on it and a buttstock and a pistol grip on it, and you know, have at it, which is pretty much what it is at this point. So I don't know. We'll see what happens this year.
I have a feeling you'll see an increased number in your archery season. The only plus side I seen to the crossbow is our gun season is kind of dying. So you don't have people out there just blasting every deer that runs by.
You think they've kind of made a lateral like transition to a crossbow instead, and they're just shooting their deer earlier or what?
I do. I think the majority of your gun hunters transition to a crossbow, and drives were big here, and we used to drive, but on a drive you don't have time to study a deer, so
right.
Small bucks would get shot. Now with a crossbow, the only positive is the guys are picky as far as what buck they shoot, but they're also shooting way more bucks than they was, so it's kind of a trade-off.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know, but anyway, going back to you, Billy. I can't remember if you answered or not. Like, what was the switch for you? Going like full traditional. I know you said you saw it kind of, you saw the writing on the wall. You wanted to make it a little bit easier. A little bit harder because it was getting way too easy. And I mean, where are you hunting at this point? Like, are you on public? Are you on private? Like, how easy, quote unquote, is it for you to kind of, was it back then to fill your tags? And you're like, I need to up the effort here.
So back then, I was primarily hunting private, and I was super lucky to have access to some fairly good private land. And I guess where I decided like traditional is something I could do and be successful at, I shot my first one in, I think, 2010 with a little 42-pound AMF wing recurve. And I hunted the next season on and off with the compound and the recurve, and then the following season, that was it. I was hooked, and I was all in.
How long did it take you to get success?
Honestly, I shot under one deer the year before with a recurve. I would just take it whenever I felt like. And actually, that deer, I was just walking around the woods, kind of scouting, and I had a buck chase a doe by me. So I guess the first year I was really dedicated to it, I shot one.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it was, and I had killed a really good buck on film. We used to film with a compound, and that first one with the recurve was almost just as cool to me. And that from there, it was no doubt I was going to do it.
That's awesome. You said private land. Are you still mostly private land now, or are you?
I actually hunt both now. I really enjoy going to the lake in the early season and hunting over feed trees. We got a lot of oaks back around here, around home. And that gives me a chance to leave my better spots alone. So when I go in there, they're undisturbed.
You said going to the lake. Are you going to like some lake access somewhere to an island or what's?
So a lot of our lakes around home here have is typically surrounded completely by public land.
Okay. So you're able to just kind of cut across and just go directly. I don't know. Pick the landing site that you want, basically, and kind of walk in instead of a longer, more circuitous route, I guess.
Yeah, so I'll take the boat, drop it in the lake, and then I can go pretty much anywhere I want on the lake. And it's nice because you can come off the lake, you get a lot shorter walk. And I hunt a lot of times really close to the lake, within 300-400 yards. And what will actually happen in the evening is that lake water is colder than the air, so it'll pull your thermals to the lake. Yeah. And if you're set up right, you pretty much aren't going to get busted.
Are these lakes, let's talk about this a little bit. Like when you're looking for, so early season, it's going to be feed trees, right? Obviously we're going to try and fixate on oaks, that kind of stuff. But, as it maybe gets later in the season, foliage comes down, less cover, the feed situation isn't, you know, as great. Are those areas still as successful? And like, and what does the terrain look like? Because like around here, we've got a lot of lake access. I don't have a boat. But you know, we could have a lot of river or lake access, but there's like oxbow lakes and things like that. And I'm just curious, you know, how certain people hunt those, let's say mid to late season, you know what I mean? Like early season, and I'm assuming you're like, oh, it's just feed trees, but later on, like how are you approaching something like that?
So most of the time by then I move to my private, but if I'm not, I'm just looking for browse lines basically. And so most of our lakes are, I guess, technically reservoirs. They were built by the Army Corps of Engineers. So we don't have a lot of oxbows like you would have off of a river.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got a lot of terrain around the lake. We'll have pretty steep elevation gains, and you can use that to your advantage and get on benches, especially if they have feed trees, and you can use that to get the deer. They're obviously probably going to travel that bench if it's taking them where they want to go.
Along a shoreline, where are you finding the deer like to? Well, let's just take a buck, for example. You know, we all know that, you know, rule of thumb, they want to be, you know, back against some sort of obstacle, meaning like water or like a cliff or something like that. You know, they want the air behind their back. They want to be able to see an exit, all that kind of stuff. Are those the kind of things that you're trying to set up for as well? And how does it actually work out that way, I guess?
Typically it will. Typically they'll be bedded higher on the hill. And a lot of times, for whatever reason, I think because they've timbered those places in the past, it'll be thicker up there, and it makes actually a great bedding area.
Mm-hmm.
And them deer will a lot of times travel down off of that, and it'll be thick. Sometimes your transition line will be halfway down the hill. Sometimes it'll be three quarters where you get into your more open hardwoods, and they'll just travel that transition line right down to the feed trees.
Are they doing, when it starts to open up a little bit, do you find that, you know, they're, Like I never see deer like just out in the wide open during daylight hours, you know, like crossing, you know, there's lots of areas like that around here, right? And you can come across a trail, you can come across all kinds of, you know, deer poop and all that. You're like, oh wow, it's great. But then you kind of look around going, there's no deer in their right mind that will walk around in daylight hours. This is all nighttime activity. Are they able to do that where you are? Because I'm asking because I'm really fascinated with this water thing, right? Because it seems like if they're bedded somewhere and like watching, let's say, toward water, or watching some sort of access point, is it hilly enough? Is it forested enough, thick enough that they can't see you? Because it seems to me if they're bedded on a, you know, like you said, if they're bedded on a hill somewhere, but you're coming in from the water, and especially if it's like afternoon, you've got the thermals pulling away from them, it would seem like they wouldn't want to, they would want to be somewhere, lower so that the thermals would be coming toward them. Do you know what I mean? Like how do you kind of marry the two?
Well, a lot of times they're still up high because that's where the cover is. And you had asked about later season. A lot of times then I'll move up against the cover or into the cover. And if they have that wind pulling off the top, they'll be on the edge or right inside because they can see everything in that open. And our open woods aren't like you would think giant open hardwoods. There, you've still got patches of brush in there. But they'll walk that edge because now they can smell everything in the thick behind them and they can see everything ahead of them. And a lot of times I'll set up on that transition line.
Gotcha. I'm guessing oaks are still like the two, you know, like white oak, red oak, right? Early season, late season. They're probably like your biggest mast, you know, or source of food, right? I mean, if you're going to hunt like some sort of feed, that's what you're setting up on or close to setting up on?
Yeah, so we have actually not that many white oaks around us, a lot more red oaks, and that's primarily what you're going to find. But if you can find a white oak early in the season, you're really in a good spot.
Yeah, our white oaks, we have them. They don't seem, for some reason, they don't seem to drop a lot like the reds do. And ours come in like, man, some of them are ready to drop like late August. So if we have like a windstorm come in or heavy rain or like heavy windstorm or something, a lot of times, you know, those white acorns are, they're down, they're on the ground, they're done. You know, our season does, I mean, our season opens up here on Saturday, this coming Saturday on the 16th. So a lot of places will already have had their mast, you know, the white acorns drop. Squirrels go through them, deer go through them, like they're done. Like I've yet, maybe I need to be a better woodsman, I don't know, but I've yet to find a white oak that's like raining down oaks that's actually in a huntable spot. You know, there's a few places I walk by that that are along the road, and they're literally like right on the road, and you can't hunt anywhere near there. And I've had them rain down. I'm like, wow, this would be a perfect place, you know, to kind of set up. Or there's a few at the outdoor archery range I go to here, like, you know, like 10 minutes away from me, 5 minutes away from me, and they're raining down. I'm like, wow, this would be a good place to set up, but you can't hunt there. So I've never had much luck with finding like fresh hot sign, like fresh poop, fresh activity, and fresh mass drop for white acorns. You know, red oaks, yes. Later on, some sugar maples and those honey locusts, yes. But I pretty much given up on the white oaks, honestly. Like if I luck into one, I'm like, yay, you know, hooray, this is a unicorn. But I don't really, you know, I don't hold out much hope.
Yeah, we don't have a lot of them, and I'm not sure why. We have predominantly red oaks, and the honey locust pod's a good thing to look for, but we don't have very many of those either.
Any kind of ag around you?
On the private pieces, yeah. Actually, a lot of my private pieces are surrounded by ag.
Are you then kind of changing your tactics, I'm guessing? Like, are you in between, like, an ag field? What do they call it? What do they call it when the deer, like, stop just inside the tree line?
Staging area.
There you go. Thank you. I knew it was on the tip of my tongue. Are you kind of targeting, like, areas like that? Or are you trying to get, like, a lot closer to them coming out of bedding? You know what I mean? Are you closer to the bedding side, I guess I should say, or closer to the destination side, like near those ag fields?
It is 100% going to depend on situation. But a lot of times I'm either hunting that staging area, or I'm hunting a transition zone between bed and feed.
Okay, so how's the timing on that? Because, you know, by the time they make, you know, let's just say, I don't know, a mature buck, right? I mean, and this is straight out of like Dan Infault here. This is anything profound that I'm saying, right? But I do find it to be true. You know, like, if you're any of these animals that have, like, lived a few years and they're a little bit, you know, more kind of cued in, right, or clued in, they're probably not going to be where you need to be, out of their bed and anywhere in a shootable area, like far away from their bed by the time, like, it gets dark, right? I mean, they're going to wait a little bit. So if the distance between, let's say, a bed and their destination for, you know, whatever, like, food source or whatever they're going to, you could be sitting there all night, and they won't even show up by the time it's dark 30. So are you trying to get in a whole lot closer to bedding? And if so, you know, how close are you getting?
Ideally, I would like to be within 300 yards of bedding, but sometimes we've got a lot of small parcels here. And sometimes I'm absolutely just not going to be able to get that close. Mm-hmm. And then that's typically where I'm going to try to take advantage of a buck cruising in mid to late October.
Right.
I want to be where he wants to be to check scrapes before he heads to food.
Do you find, that the bucks in your area kind of cruise like perpendicular to, let's just say, there's like sets of doe bedding, right? Various groups, whatever. Do you ever find it like they run like a certain line, right? And then they'll check like this area, that area, that area. Not necessarily just for scrapes, but like proximity to doe beds. Do you find that at all?
Yeah, and what I also see later in October is, I've got a piece that I'm thinking about that a lot of times my does will work straight off the hill. Well, then bucks don't want to run up and down that hill and check every trail. So they're actually going to cut across the side of the hill to check all those trails, and they can do it in a lot less time. And if a doe come off one of them trails, they'll pick that up a lot quicker and a lot easier than, you know, trying to follow a doe's trail.
Sure. Yeah. And they can smell anything coming over the top of that, kind of, you know, tumbling down the hill, I suppose, right?
Yes.
Scent wise. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. I've got a spot here. Like last year I was kind of honing in on, not that I chase bucks, but it happened to be a deer that I was patterning. So I'm like, okay, I'm gonna try and get. And I had a couple encounters with them, but yeah, same thing. I mean, I located certain, most definitely, like doe bedding areas, right? Because I'd walk through there and you could see all the, you know, like multiple beds, you know, like in a circle kind of thing. And like, oh, okay, like doe bedding. But then I know there was a buck that was cruising, and I saw, you know, all his sign, all his rubs, all that stuff. And I mean, it was just like textbook, like Pat, but the trick was getting, again, close enough at the times that I could be close enough to get in A without being seen, but also have him, be done doing whatever he's doing. Cause he was going along one line, and then he was like kind of making a hard right turn basically, and then going across, you know, like towards me and then behind me, let's say, wherever I was set up. And I guess the trick was to kind of be in the right spot with the right timing without it getting too late. And I almost made it happen a few times, but you know, it's nice when you can kind of pattern something like that. So I'm gonna try that again here in a few days. But you know, it's kind of funny, like these animals, you know, like no matter where they are, they kind of revert to like certain basic things, right? I mean, they behave a certain way. They may change their exact footsteps and patterns like a little bit locally, but in general, like they've only got a few plays in their playbook, it seems like.
Yeah, they're definitely a creature of habit. They are very... They live there all the time, and we don't. We're there when we get to hunt. So they should beat us 90% of the time. And we just have to be at the right spot at the right time. And Alan Altizer said something on a Stick Boys podcast that really caught my attention. He said you need to hunt an almost wrong wind. If you hunt a place that the wind's perfect for you, it's not good for that buck. Yeah, and he's probably not going to be there.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the trick is cutting, you know, how close can you cut, you know, and it's never a steady wind, right? Any of those places, any of the cool places, cool meaning not like temperature wise, but like, you know, places to be. This is the place to be. You know, it's like the difference between like one tree and like another tree like 10 yards over. You know, I mean, that could be the difference between. I could get a swirl here and get away with it, or I could go to that tree and get a swirl there and I won't get away with it, you know, or it might buy me another like 3 yards before, you know, as he, you know, he realizes something's up. So yeah, I like that game. I like kind of, I don't know, shortening the circle, you know what I mean? Like smaller and smaller, like yeah. Toward where he is, and just, you know, without, I guess, popping the bubble, I suppose.
Yeah, absolutely. And access is critical, and people don't really think about that. But if you have to walk past where that deer's going to walk, even though maybe you can kill him 10 feet before he hits your trail, if he comes after, he knows you're there. I mean, the gig's pretty much up.
The trick for me sometimes... Sorry, I got a piece of ice in my mouth there. The trick for me sometimes is like a lot of, I hunt like 99% like public, right? So, and a lot of these are, you know, public hiking trails too. They're, you know, hiking trails, biking trails, whatever. So they do see people on those trails all the time. Now, when you get off the trails, obviously, that's a different story. They're like, hey, people aren't supposed to be here. Just like, you know, people that hunt like in really urban areas, you know, they're like, oh, there's deer in my backyard all the time. But like, they know the buffer, right? Like take 3 steps off of, you know, closer to them or off of like your normal pattern, then they're gone. Right. So, but I always wonder like, okay, well, am I good to just kind of bomb it in there on the trail? And, you know, to them, I'm just another hiker, biker, dog walker, horse, you know, rider, whatever. Or no matter what, they're going to be spooked. You know what I mean? I almost wish, but this is a really like crazy thing to say. Some of these areas, I almost wish there were more people there. You know, it's nice to have the woods to yourself. It's nice not to have to deal with, you know, someone on horseback walking by or someone, you know, jogging or whatever they're doing, right? But I almost wish in some areas there would be more scent so that, let me put it another way. I wish it was busier more often. You know, it's one thing if they smell a person like, oh, once every 3 days someone came by versus like, oh, there's like people here like every day and they get desensitized to it every day. So if you go in, let's say if it's a place where it's not all that popular, they do smell people there all the time, but you know, it's been a few days since someone's walked through here and now I'm walking through here. You know what I mean? Does that set them on edge, or is that normal to them? You know, I'd love to know what's going on in a deer's mind.
Like you had said, it's amazing that they know, like, soon as you walk out of your yard, if you have deer in your yard all the time, as soon as you get in the woods, they 100% know something is going on, and they know that you probably really shouldn't be there, and it puts them on edge.
Yeah, they're super smart. And the same thing with noise. You know, some people say, hey, if it's in an area where there's a lot of other, like, non-hunting, you know, traffic, right? People on their phones, people joking, talking, whatever. You can, you know, when in Rome, play the part. You know, so just walk in loud, talk to yourself, haha, tell jokes, whatever. And it just seems like what everyone else does, instead of being like tiptoeing, you know, sneaky predator. Where for some reason, you know, sixth sense, they pick up on that you're a predator. But again, this is all on, like, you know, a beaten path or a gravel walking path or a dirt path or something like that. You know, once you step in the woods, you know, just even 2 yards, you know, now it's like, oh, people don't hang out here. And you kind of set them on edge, but it's nice to be able to chop 90% of that distance with just on a normal walking trail. And acting just like, you know, like Joe Schmo, you know, dog walker.
It sounds like you need a canoe to get on some water access. That is huge back here, because we can get to places that people aren't going to walk to.
True. There's a lot of people here that have taken up the whole water access thing. We've got a lot of rivers. And I'll be the first to tell you, I'm not that comfortable on the water, right? Because some of these waters, some of these rivers, like, get, like, we're in a lot of, like floodplain area. There's a lot of sloughs, a lot of marshes, a lot of little creeks that then, you know, flow into marshes. And then those marshes, when they flow into a river. And then all of a sudden, it's one big giant, you know, acres and acres underwater. And so, I don't know. I'm not that comfortable with it, especially if I'm going, you know, alone kind of thing. Plus it's more paraphernalia and stuff. I mean, I just don't have room to carry in a canoe and doing all, you know, or kayak and all that stuff, but guys do it here. You know, I know a few, and it's certainly beneficial. You know, like, there's another local guy here. I actually had him on the podcast a couple of years ago or whatever. And we hunt, we've never actually met in person, but we hunt the same spots. And he's like, oh yeah, I know exactly where that is. So, you know, what takes me like a mile and three quarters, on foot to walk in. I mean, he just, you know, putts around on his boat and just literally walks up the hill to exactly where he wants to be. So it is enticing, but I got to draw the line somewhere with, you know, whether it means success or not success. You know, I'm not a water guy.
I will tell you, hunting public, if you kill any deer on public, that is awesome. And that is a trophy.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I'm going out Saturday night, because I work pretty much every damn day, but I'm off Mondays. And I'm going out Saturday night. So we open Saturday. I'm going to leave work a little bit early and get a few hours in. So I, you know, in my mind, it's like, well, you know how we all do this planning. Like, okay, how quickly can I get to this one spot? Because there's a few spots that are just like this, like, primo. I want to be there. So now, of course, I want to decide, is it going to be spot A, spot B, or spot C? And if it is, how much time do I have to get in? Is it going to be a tree stand? Am I going to go and just, like, bomb it in there real quick with a ghillie? Am I going to be on the ground? So that's part of the fun part of planning. But I'm like super excited for this year. Last few years, I've actually, you know, stepped up my, I guess, woodsmanship game. You know what I mean? Where, like, before I would go and sit, I'm like, oh, this would be great if a deer walked by here. And then it's like, well, deer aren't walking by here, you know? So I think last year, before, I committed to myself, I said, look, I'm going to keep walking, even if it means I never walk up or go up a tree. I'm not going to stop and climb a tree or settle down or pick a spot or whatever, unless I see, like, crazy, crazy hot sign. And it's like crazy, crazy hot sign for the time of day, you know, potentially for the time of day that I'm there. Otherwise, then I'm just going to consider it scouting, because otherwise I'm just going to waste my time anyway, sitting in a tree. And when I started doing that, man, I mean, I got, like, so much closer to these deers. I found so many more beds. I put more pieces of the puzzle together. And it's just, I'm just so psyched for this year. I really am.
Well, you're doing what you need to do, and that's putting in the time and the effort. That'll pay dividends in the future.
I hope so, man. I hope so. I mean, I'm sitting here right now downstairs in my my wife and daughter call this my hovel hole. You know, I'm sitting in my chair here. I'm staring at my bows. I'm tinkering around with my tree stand right here. You know, I'm just so ready to get the season going and just walk around with a bow in my hand. So,
I lost you.
Hello?
Yeah, I got you now. I lost you for a minute.
Oh, there we go. I was saying, like, my season open. I don't know where you left off or whatever. When does your season open up?
Either the 29th or 30th. So I'm pretty jealous you get to hunt this weekend.
Okay. Yeah, because I'm going out Saturday night, and I'm going out Monday, like, pretty much all day. Because Monday's my one, you know, whole day off, basically. So, yeah, I'm psyched. Do you go into how do you approach your preseason? Like, do you have a lot of, like, preset stuff? Do you hit certain, like, tracks of private that you have? You said you have access to some private. How do you choose where you're going to be, and how do you move around those areas? How do you set up?
So 90% of the time I'm running a hang and hunt, set up by Lone Wolf, and I'll take it in, hang it, and then bring it back out with me. I do have some pre-hung stuff, but I typically try not to hunt my good private stuff till towards the end of October, unless I have a buck that's working. I just mostly go to the lake. That way I'm out, I'm hunting, and I'm not really looking to kill a buck there. Now, if a good one would walk by, I would 100% shoot it. But mostly I'm trying to get out there, get in the woods, and maybe fill a doe tag or two. And then I'll just pick where I'm going to hunt by. I'll go scout, find the best sign, and then I'll have half a dozen places. And then I'll pick which one I'm going to based on what the wind's doing.
Are you are you picky about what you're shooting? I mean, are you like I don't know, brown it's down? I know you said you want to get a few does or whatever, but when it comes to like do you target bucks, or do you target a certain age, you know, age class?
Yes. So I am pretty picky on bucks. I'm typically, because we have the genetics and we have the place to do it on the private land. I typically am looking for about a 4.5-5-year-old deer.
Oh wow!
I'm fairly picky in that regard.
Interesting. Do you do any kind of I don't know, management practices or whatever, or like, you know, like feeding or what do you like, what do you call that? Supplemental feeding and all that stuff on some of these private tracks. Like, do you have access to do that kind of stuff?
So yes, I do. And it depends what I do, depending on the track. I own 24 acres, and on that, I do a lot of timber management and I plant food plots. There's some places I will do supplemental feeding. It honestly just depends, but I would rather not. But in Ohio, you can hunt over bait, and there's everybody that surrounds this area is baiting. So you pretty much don't have a choice, or you're not going to see deer.
Really?
I have a neighbor that feeds about 500 pounds of corn a week.
Holy shit.
I can't compete with that.
Good lord. Do you try to use it against them? Like, kind of set up close or whatever? Or do you not play that game?
Well, he's kind of he's a friend, and I can't get that close to his property, but does, I mean, he does feed a lot of corn. The only good thing is he pulls a lot of does away from me. So I don't have to feed as many, but I do food plots on that property, and occasionally we will feed there. It's not my favorite thing to do, but it's kind of in Ohio, it's kind of what you have to do now.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah, there's no baiting here or whatever, but God, who knows with all this, you know.
I'm really jealous of that, to be honest with you. I wish we could go back to the old ways and hunt over sign. And I mean, I'm fine with food plots and ag field. That's perfectly
but,
fine.
But it sounds like even like in a place that's like maybe because it was more entrenched in the hunting culture, right? But like Michigan, for example, when they got rid of baiting, like it didn't seem to stop anybody. You know, it sounds like everyone's still like dumping like tons and tons of bait, and that seems like the DNR really doesn't give a shit. You know, from what I understand.
That is what worries me. Now, we are super lucky in the fact that you cannot bait on public land, which is kind of the allure of me going there. I can hunt the way I want to hunt, and I shouldn't have to deal with people baiting.
Yeah. Is public really crowded by you?
Not really, typically, in the early season. Now, into the rut and into gun season, you'll get a lot more people out there.
Okay. Do you change your tactics to account for the influx of, you know, all this pressure?
Honestly, I pretty much just come the rut. I just hunt the public stuff for the most part.
Yeah.
Not the public. I'm sorry. My private.
The private. Yeah. I know what you meant. Yeah. Just. Yeah. That's probably a wise choice. Yeah. I do that here with during gun season. You know. And I participate in gun season. You know. Most of the stuff I shoot with a rifle anyway, but I just don't want to be in the woods like during that week and a half or whatever it is. Muzzleloader's not so bad, you know, around here, but rifle for sure. I just don't want to be in public with all that lead flying around, you know. It's just,
I don't blame you. Actually, our muzzleloader season, when we get the weather for it, is probably one of my favorite times to hunt. If we get a super cold snap for a couple weeks and some snow, it'll put them deer into the fields, into the food plots and the pick corn fields. And they're actually pretty patternable, and you'll get your bucks moving in the daylight.
They're just trying to keep up that, they're probably, I mean, wore out from the rut at that point, you know. They probably haven't depleted all their energy, you know, but it's a beginning of like, hey, we probably need to get some, you know, caloric intake here, and the does especially too, you know. I love that season too. It's just I like when it's cold. I like when it's snowing, and I mostly like that it keeps a lot of people away.
It does. Sure. You will hardly ever see anybody in the woods at that point in time.
Yeah, it's almost like a switch that goes, that just shuts off here, you know, right after, like mid-November, let's say, mid to late November, depending on what zone we're in, because some zones here are like only like the first, like, you know, like week and a half, some are 3 weeks or whatever, but even in our muzzleloader season starts like the day, like the Saturday after Thanksgiving, right? So very end of November, and it goes for like 2 weeks. And there's like nobody out there. It's wonderful, you know. It's back to, you know, it's back to the woods that going back to earlier in the conversation, the elitist me wants. You know, there's nobody out there, and I was just walking around by myself and just enjoying like the crisp cold air. You know, it's just that's fun for me.
Yeah. So when you said your muzzleloader season starts a Saturday after Thanksgiving. Yep. Our gun season starts the Monday after Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And then it will run for a week. And then our muzzleloader is actually in January. I'm assuming you have an early rifle season then.
We do. Ours is smack dab in the middle of the rut. So it usually starts, what is it, like the first Saturday, I guess it would be, in November. You know, so like November, like 6, 7, 7, 8, somewhere around there, right? Then it goes, anywhere from like 2 weeks to 3 weeks, basically, again, depending on what area, you know, you're in, what zone you're in. Then that ends, and basically it's stopped for like, you know, a week or whatever, basically, and then muzzleloader picks right up. So our basically, and archery here goes like throughout. So archery starts, you know, like this Saturday, right, like mid-September, and it goes to December 31. We don't have any deer. There might be some CWD stuff like down in the southeast. I'm not sure, for like, you know, the next weekend or something like that into January, but I'd have to check. But deer just pretty much shuts off, and then it's small game through January and February continues on. And that's pretty much our season.
We're pretty fortunate here. We always start the last Saturday in September, and our season will run all the way to the first couple of days of February.
Oh, wow. Interesting. But you guys at least get to, and I say this, you get to miss the rut as far as rifle season goes, right? So I think that helps with not having just deer shot just because they're, you know, crazy stupid and in love, you know what I mean? Having it smack dab in the middle of the rut, man, these bucks, like, they stand no chance, you know, they're just stupid.
Yeah, so you're 100% right on that. We are very lucky that our gun season is not in the middle of a rut, or it would be, they would massacre them.
Let's go back to your setup. I do want to talk about your setup a little bit. So you said you're kind of, you know, on the public and some private, you said you do like a lone wolf. Is it like a, climber? Is it just kind of walk through your system. Like how are you carrying this in? How are you approaching the tree? How are you getting up the tree, down the tree, that kind of stuff. So I want to kind of geek out a little bit with your equipment.
Okay. So I'm running a lone wolf hang on stand and four sticks. I have the stick quiver that goes on the stand, and I carry everything in like that.
Can I interrupt you real quick? Is that quiet? Yeah. Is the stick quiver quiet?
I think it is. You have to tie everything down tight, but I think it is. Yeah, I don't notice it. So I'll carry that in. I actually go very light compared to a lot of people. I'll carry that. I'll have a flashlight or two, and I'll have my keys for the boat. You gotta lock your boat up around here. And then I'll basically have my bow and arrows, and that's pretty much all I'm carrying 90% of the time. If I kill a deer, I'm going back to the truck to get my other my good flashlight and my bag to take care of the deer.
Really?
Yep.
God, I wish I could be that light. I can't. I can't, man.
It's very rare. It's very rare that I will take a backpack with me. I typically don't need it. We've got a pretty good group of friends that I shoot with, and if I would go get a deer by myself, they would not be happy. If I robbed them of a track, they would be pretty upset with me. So
that's awesome.
It is. It is really cool. And we're not, even when I'm at the lake, I'm not going in a couple miles like you're walking. So it's not a big deal for me to drop back down to the boat, run over the truck, get a hold of everybody, and pick them up and go back and find a deer.
That's cool. Yeah, I don't have that. Some areas, yes, I could do that, you know. And just recently I was kind of going through a couple of my backpacks here. I'm staring at them now. It's like, man, I really want to take the smaller one, just cause it's smaller. And, you know, I'm strapping my stand to my pack either way, right? Whether it's a smaller one or the big one, but then it's like, okay, well, do I need this? Do I need that? Do I need this? And what if I have to track it? I get hung up on the what if possibility, you know, like I might be like, okay, I'm going to this tree and it's only like a quarter mile in. Right. But what if I get there and I decide I'm just going to keep walking and I'm going to go like way, way deeper? Then what? You know, and if I go way, way deeper, then I don't want to have to come all the way back out and then go all the way back in, you know. But then reality sets in. It's like, you don't shoot anything anyway, Emerald, so what are you even worried about? So I don't know. I kind of do all this mental like rigmarole in my head, you know, but I really envy the guys that can go in there with like just a hip quiver or like a side, you know, like a fanny pack or something like that. They're like, oh yeah, you know, like, so what do you do? Like, I mean, do you carry like water at all? I mean, I chug water Gatorade like crazy cause I sweat like crazy. You know, our mornings and or evenings can be like pretty chilly, even early season. So I've always got like, you know, some sort of jacket or another layer and this and that. So how do you deal with that? You just kind of just deal with it and tough it out or what?
Pretty much tough it out. I typically, now if I was on an all day sit, I would take food and water, but typically I'm only sitting 4 hours, maybe. I'll go in, find where I'm going to go, find my tree, go up. I take all my sticks off my stand. I'll hang my first stick, put my stand back on my back, and I have a bow rope, hook it to my bow, and I'll take the strap off of my stick and run it through my linesman's loop on both sides, so I have my two sticks hanging off. I'll hook my belt, I'll hang my second stick, and then I just go up the tree, hang my stand, and then I'm ready to pull my bow up.
So you just go up in one shot?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, go up in one shot. You got one of the older ones then, like a Lone Wolf Assault or Alpha, or what do you got?
It is an older one. You know, I don't even know the model, to be honest with you. I picked it up from a friend of mine that was getting rid of it. I think it's probably the Assault or Assault 2.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I'd gotten that one before they, you know, completely changed it over to, because I've got a Novix Hilo and it's narrower, you know, and I always find my boots like kind of like rubbing the cables. I kind of want a wider stand, but I don't want like the full width wide one. But I don't know. I'm making this one work, I guess. But so let's talk about your bow and arrow setup, right? I saw you shoot. God, what did you have? Did you have like a, was it like an Assenheimer or something like that? Is that what that is?
Assenheimer, yeah.
Often, yeah. Okay. What's talk about that thing? Because you shoot that thing like freaking crazy. We, you know, at ETAR, right? We all kind of shot in the same group, you know, for the 3 days or whatever. And I do want you to like to tell it in your words, but I mean, watching you shoot, I was like, good God! And you're like 100% instinctive. It seems like you don't hold a lot. But holy crap, are you accurate? I mean, how do you just walk me through what you do there?
All right. So you're right. I'm an instinctive shooter. And if you put me in front of somebody like Tom Plum, he would pick me apart. I guarantee I have bad habits, but it's worked. I've learned on my own and there wasn't a lot of stuff. So I shoot that Ossenheimer, I shoot aluminum arrows, and I'll walk up, like at ETAR, we'd walk up to the stake, and I would literally just look at that spot I want to hit, draw an anchor, and like you said, I'm not in my anchor very long at all. Hit my anchor, and the shot will break, and sometimes, most of the time, but I'll hit where I'm looking at. I can't explain to you how I do it. But it's just years and years of shooting a trad bow.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I was amazed. A little bit jealous, I'm going to tell you. I'm super jealous of guys that can just do it like that instinctively, right? And not only that, like you were able to pick, like you know, you along those courses, right? You randomly pick up an arrow. Someone's arrow or whatever, and it's like, oh, I'm gonna take this along or something like that, and you'll shoot that too, and you know that that's not tuned to your bow. It might have a different tip weight, it might be whatever, or I saw you pick up like other people's bows. I know you might have shot Travis's bow or whatever. I can't remember. And you're just as good with those ones as you are with your own, you know. And I'm like, man, I wish I had that ability. You know, doesn't matter what's in your hand. It's like you just kind of make it happen. So that's very cool. It was super cool to watch. I'll tell you that. Jealous or not?
Oh, thank you. I think it just comes from doing it a lot. And the last couple of years, I haven't been as good about it. But I shoot several times a week. But there was a time that I would shoot my bow probably six times a week for an hour.
Just various distances, or like, what do you like in your off time? Not off time, but in non-hunting season, right? When you're shooting your bow, what are you doing? Are you shooting targets? Are you shooting 3Ds? Are you like stump shooting? I mean, what's
the majority of the time I'm shooting 3Ds? I'll stump shoot in the spring before the 3D tournaments open up, but I just shoot a lot of 3Ds, and I have quite a few 3Ds that actually I keep at a friend's house, and I can go throw three or four of them out in his woods and go shoot them and then put them back when I'm done.
That's crazy. What's the poundage on that thing?
At my draw length, it's pulling about 62 or 63 pounds.
Oh, good Lord. And you're a big dude, man. You can pull that. Like you're like a beefy guy, but like there was no like shaking or quivering or whatever, right? Cause a lot of guys are like, shoot a, 55, 60 pound bow. And then you watch them pull it to like, 25 inches and they're shaking and it's gone. But it wasn't like that. So how long have you had that bow? I mean, it seems like you're, it's kind of extension of you.
I can't tell you an exact amount of years, but I probably had that bow 6 or 7 years now.
Okay.
The funny thing is that bow was built in
1989. And then, I guess you just kind of picked it up off of somebody.
Yeah, I picked it up secondhand from a guy that had a little sporting goods shop up home here.
Interesting. Are you making your own bows too? I saw some pictures on your Instagram where you've got looks like you've dabbling into that.
I am right now. It's me and a buddy have been building some bamboo back bows, bamboo, osage, and hickory.
Bamboo, osage, and
hickory. Yep.
Just for fun, or?
Yeah. I want to try to kill a deer with one with a cedar arrow this year, and I've got some broadheads I made.
What'd you make them out of?
Actually tool steel.
Okay.
1075 tool steel.
No shit. Is it like saw blades or something like that, or file or what?
No, it's actually knife steel, and I used to run a water jet, and I had access to some scraps, and I cut some of them out.
Oh, okay. Okay. Otherwise, what are you shooting on that for your non-homemade setup? What's your broadhead of choice?
Woodsman.
What's a Woodsman? Okay.
Yep. I've shot those for better than 10 years, and I'm still running the same broadheads. It's probably not a good business model for them because they can't sell me new broadheads. they perform great.
Yeah. Yeah, you've got the poundage to push a three blade too, though, So I'm sure the blood trails are crazy great,
Yeah, they're typically pretty good if I do my part and put the arrow where it's supposed to be. I did shoot doe last year with a old snuffer broadhead, and they have a really wild cut, and that there I think they're an inch and a quarter, and that was a pretty incredible blood trail.
So I can't probably because I don't have experience with them, but the difference between the snuffers and the woodsmans, right? What's like, are they, because if you look at them, like, on pictures or whatever, they look damn near the same to me. Am I wrong on that? Or like, what's the difference between them?
No, so you're pretty close. I think the Woodsman was kind of modeled after the Snuffer after Roger Rothar quit producing them.
Yeah.
They're actually really close. The Snuffer I have is a lot wider, though.
Oh, okay. Okay. Width is different.
Yes.
Interesting. God, what else am I going to ask you then? We talked about, so we talked about your shot process, which really isn't, you know, a process. You just kind of, you know, shoot it, make it happen or whatever. Do you hunt off the ground at all? Do you do any kind of ground hunting, or are you just like strictly out of a tree stand?
For the most part, just out of a tree stand. It's, we don't really have good stalking terrain around here, and I've never had like great luck trying to get on ground level with a deer and tuck back into a deadfall or anything like that. I've typically not been able to get shots at them.
Okay. Interesting. Ohio intrigues me because just the kind of varied terrain that everyone talks about, like you touched on it. I've heard other people touch on it about how like hilly it can be, rocky it can be. So that kind of fascinates me, like of just trying to move through that terrain. And we kind of talked about like the hills and drop offs and you know, going down towards, you know, ravines or lakes or rivers or that kind of stuff for thermals. But in my mind, I could be 100% wrong, that there would be kind of little micro climates in these areas, right? Because I see pictures and I see like a rocky crag and it's like, you know, like 10, 20, you know, 15 feet high. And then there's like another little bench and then you keep going and then there's another little rocky crag. So to me, it seems like there would be a lot of little microclimates and like thermal areas, you know, that you'd have to kind of watch out for. I could be totally off base with that, or that might be not where you, you know, where you are, but, you know, guys that hunt like public in the, what's the like giant forest down there in the southeast there?
That's probably Wayne National.
Wayne National. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's just, I don't, it intrigues me. It's a state that I would like to go, you know, just try my hand at just because, you know, it's not that far away from me, Ohio. You know, compared to, I don't know, some of these other places or whatever, but it just seemed like it would be a cool place to hunt, you know?
It definitely is. We don't have a lot of the rockiness you're talking about, except around a couple of the lakes, it's like that. But if you have a big rock, you can use that to your advantage. You can set up because you know them deer are going to have to go either above or below it. And if they're already on that trail, they're not going to want to drop below it and come back up 90% of the time. They would rather skirt just above it.
Mm-hmm. You
really use that to your advantage. And plus, your thermal should be drawing down later in the evening.
Yeah. So
that set up a pretty good situation for you.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I don't know. I'd certainly like to... I've started planning for out of state trips, because, you know, this year I went to Florida. That was fun. Obviously went to ETAR. It wasn't a hunting trip, but that was fun. And I'm like, you know, I'd like to have some more of these, like, just kind of out of state adventures, you know, even if it means going somewhere for the first time, obviously trying to learn the area, that kind of stuff. So are you solely in Ohio then? I mean, do you do any other out of state hunts, or do you chase other species at all?
I haven't too much. I've hunted turkeys in Georgia and I've hunted Missouri. Will and I are headed to Georgia to hog hunt with the PBS in December.
Oh, cool.
So that should be a pretty good time. Well, it's a hog and deer hunt, so we can shoot either. And I believe I got to check the regulations. I think we get 5 deer tags and we're on Blackbeard Island. So we'll be out.
Oh, you're doing that.
Yeah, so it should be a good time. It'll be literally the front side's the ocean and the back side's intercoastal.
That's cool. I hear lots of cool things about that hunt. Yeah, Georgia's cool, man. I like I said, I don't have a ton of experience there other than just this last trip down there. But it seems like there's a lot of opportunities down there. I read about that that Blackbeard Island hunt, and yeah, it's pretty intriguing. And I know you guys did a what was it, the Land Between the Lakes hunt too, right? That LBL one, is that Kentucky then?
That is Kentucky. I did not do that. Actually, Will and Travis did that hunt. And Will's trying to get me to go, but it falls right in. It's like middle of October, and I just can't bring myself to leave Ohio at that point.
Yeah, Travis was trying to get me to go too, and I can't. I can't. It's, you know, I think my trip allotment for the year, at least, you know, to the end of the year here is pretty much run its course, you know, between what hunting I have here and family commitments and holiday commitments and people coming to visit and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, that's just kind of something I'd like to do more. For some reason, like I don't really have a burning desire to go out west and hunt elk. I know that sounds like sacrilege. Everyone's, you know, just crazy about elk. Like, I'm like, man, I just want to go on more whitetail trips and I'd love to shoot a bear. That's what I want to do.
If you come to Ohio, I'll show you around some public places.
Yeah, getting the time is the hard part.
Yeah, absolutely.
To be able to do that. Are you married at all? Are you married? Do you have kids or anything like that? Or
I am not. That's why I get to hunt as much as I do.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, that's pros and cons to everything. Just maybe we could start like wrapping this up here. We've been on for like an hour and 15. What do you got coming up? What do you got coming up this year? Are you just going to stick to Ohio then? And do you have anything that you're targeting? Anything else cool on the horizon for you?
I'm probably pretty much going to stick to Ohio other than that Blackbeard hunt. If for some reason I would get lucky and kill one early, 2 years ago, I killed one October 17th. If that happens, I would really like to spend some time in West Virginia this year. I've went down and scouted a few places there in the past and found a few places I think I could shoot a deer or two down there.
Really? Is that, how far away is that for you? Can't be that far, like 6 hours?
No, depending on where I'm going, the place I scouted's two, but I found a couple other places to look at that are only an hour and a half.
Oh, geez. Okay. Oh, yeah, I suppose. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Would that be like kind of similar terrain to where you're at or?
West Virginia is a little more mountainous than where we are, but it's along the same lines, but a lot steeper in places.
God, that'd be fun too. That's one of those states where you don't hear a lot of guys hunting there, but maybe that's on purpose because they seem to kill. It's one of those, like, it makes you wonder, like, is it one of those places that like Kentucky, let's say, used to be up until like 4 or 5 years ago when no one really went there, heard about it, did anything with it. Now it's like Kentucky, you know, like giants there and then like the secret's out kind of thing. So I wonder if West Virginia is kind of the same way.
I think it's definitely getting better. I think they kind of got the same thing you got going on. They've got a rifle season and a rut, which probably doesn't help them, but there's deer, and I would be super happy to go down there and shoot a doe, or I would definitely not be as picky down there on public land as far as what buck I would shoot.
Yeah. Is there a certain like number that you go into season with saying I want to shoot X many deer? I mean, are you one of these guys that like only kind of lives off of like we never buy meat at the store kind of thing? Or is it just more, you know, opportunistic, and then you're chasing one particular buck kind of thing?
Yeah, more of the second. I I typically like to shoot two does and then a buck, but it just depends. I just really like to shoot deer, and sometimes I have people that will ask me to shoot a deer for them. People that don't hunt but still like it, so I'll do that. I'll shoot one, tag it, and give it to them. So it really depends. I would typically like to shoot a couple and then try to find a good buck to hunt.
Do you have one targeted this year?
I've got one that I was getting consistent pictures of that is pretty nice. I think he'll be right in the 140s. He looks a lot like the buck I shot 2 years ago with my bow. If he stays around, that'll be the one I'm looking for. But it's one of them things. It's you never can tell around here, and especially in November, something can show up that you've never seen, and it can be just a monster.
Yeah, is it? You think it's the same genetics, like same, you know, same father or whatever?
I think it's definitely pretty close. It looks really similar. It's the same farm too, so I'm assuming it probably.
Oh is. Yeah, I suppose. So when season starts for you, how often are you getting out? How often are you able to hunt?
I'm pretty lucky that work lets me. I work till 4 every day, and they let me bring my boat with me. So in the early season, I may hunt 3 or 4 or 5 days a week.
Oh wow, God. Another reason to be jealous.
Well,
yeah.
I mean, there's sacrifices there. I mean, not having a family makes it so I can do that.
Yeah, true. All right. Let's see. Anything else like you want to talk about? Anything else we didn't touch on here? I mean, you know, we kind of touched on a lot. We didn't even really talk about ETAR much, but I mean, I got to tell you, you know, I had a great time. I'm glad I met you. I'm glad I met Will. I'm glad I finally got to meet Travis. And, you know, it just like you, I was a first timer there, right? So kind of being under your guys' kind of literally under the canopy, right? But we're all kind of set up. I mean, it was, it's great to just kind of go and just kind of just jive with people and just have a great time and then be accepted. And, I don't know. It was an awesome time. So I still, you know, I miss it. As soon as I drove away, I was having the blues, you know.
100%. It was like almost like you're having withdrawals. It was just that whole next week at work. I was thinking, I cannot wait to get back there the next week.
Yeah, the you know, like Schaefer and Chris, you know, from the Broken Arrow. They, you know, they have is a bow pression. Is that what they call it? Same deal. Like, you know, he always says, like, hey, you know, you leave a place like that and then you go to work and like you want to talk to people about, you know, your last few days and no one cares. No one gives a shit. No one even knows what the hell you're talking about. And it's like you just feel kind of all alone because, you know, you came with from your tribe and now it's like no one knows, you know. Like I told people, I'm like, oh yeah, I went to this thing in archery, whatever. And they're like, kind of like a Renaissance fair. Like, did you dress up? I'm like, no, I didn't dress up like Robin Hood. We just shot bows. You know, they don't get it.
No, they don't. I'm pretty lucky that several of my coworkers bow hunt, but they're not traditional bow hunters. So they don't really get that part of it. But yeah, the whole week after I was just wanting to be back there. It's such a good time. And it felt like it was over in a day.
Too soon.
Way too soon.
Are you going back next year?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Ditto. Yeah.
I was. Okay. Go ahead.
No, you're fine.
Oh, I was super lucky that I have no friends that wanted to go. And I had met Will. I'd actually not met Will. I met him in January up at Kalamazoo, and then he shot the winter league with us at the sportsman's club near my house, and we became friends. And I asked him if he was going to ETAR, and he said yeah. He said, are you? I said no. I said I don't have anybody who wants to go, and I don't want to drive that myself. He said, well, just jump in with me, we'll go. And I did, man. It was well worth it.
Yeah, it was a blast. Just so much fun. So, definitely doing it again. So, all right. Let's see. So you are, what is it? Is it just under Billy Dryden on Instagram? Are you on anywhere else, or do you post anything? You're not really that active on socials, but, anything you want to put out there?
It's just Billy Dryden on Instagram. I'm not one to post a whole lot. If I do something or see something that's cool, I'll post it. But other than that, that's pretty much it. There's some deer on there that I shot. There's one on there I shot last year with a friend's bow that passed away. I shot it left-handed, which was kind of a cool deal.
Oh, wow. Holy crap. There's that instinctive thing again, you know, like some of you guys can just do it. And some, if I tried to do that, man, I'd end up upside down in a ditch on fire. So it wouldn't. Yeah. Not happening over here.
That one was not instinctive. I had to completely change how I shot to shoot left-handed.
Oh, really?
Yes, I had to go under, and I had to use the point of the arrow.
Wow. Well, you're a man of all trades, I guess, or all tactics. So that's pretty good. So, all right. So stick around with me here while we wrap up. So thanks for being on. I appreciate this. I know you're again. We do it. You're like an hour ahead of me, so it's probably like 10:30 your time. So I appreciate you being on. Everybody, go follow Billy, even if he doesn't put out a lot of stuff. That's okay. Super cool guy. I can vouch for that. I'm really glad we got to meet. I hope we'll shoot again. If I had the time, I'd love to take you up on the Ohio offer, but it's just not happening. So everybody, so like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. Follow the YouTube channel. I'm going to be putting out, obviously been putting out a bunch of stuff. I really appreciate all the comments. So that's it. Wish me luck this season. Hope everyone else is having great luck. Billy, good luck this in the next few. You don't need it. You probably shoot a bunch of stuff. But either way, when your season opens up, mine opens up in a couple of days, and I can't wait. So thanks, everybody. I'll talk to you later.